fine, and I'm all ready for you.
I'm all ready for you.
Is the machine working?
Yes, I got all the technical difficulties sorted out.
Good. Listen, which way would you like to do it? It might be easier if I told you all the places I've been very fast, and then you ask me any questions. What do you think?
So we have like a formula we followed for like the other 50-some
women. Okay, go ahead. Follow your formula.
I know that some of the questions I'm going to ask you at the beginning, we already went over, but that audio is, I can't use. So I'm going to have, we're going to have to do a couple of the same things.
That's fine with me. I got no place to go, Andy.
No place to go? You're not going to the casinos in Vegas?
I think you're kidding, aren't you?
Totally.
Good. I'm locked in my room. We can't even go out to the dining room, for example. Okay, go ahead.
They don't even let you go to the dining room.
Well, no, because everybody else is there and they don't want us next to anybody. So we get fed in our rooms and it's very, they're very pleasant, they're very nice, but this is happening all over the country, you know. So anyway, you do it your way, start whatever you want to do.
So I start with the really easy question. If you could please say your first and last name and your maiden name, and could you spell your maiden last name for me?
All right, my first name is I was a civilian under the name of Agnes, A-G-N-E-S, Ruth, R-U-T-H, Phillips, P-H-I-L-I-P-S, Agnes Ruth Phillips, and that's how I entered the Navy, okay?
Okay, and what was your married name after you got out of the Navy?
Okay, when I finally was lucky enough to find an Irishman, I married a man named Francis J. Frank Feely. Last name Feely, F as in Frank, double E, L-E-Y, Frank Feely.
Okay, and you have a nickname, Scotty, right?
Oh, yeah. You know what? My mother's name was also Agnes, and she didn't want me called Aggie. So when I was about 8 years old, I had a little Scotch cap, and the only thing I could think of, so I called myself Scotty. And I spell that S-C-O-T-T-I.
Okay. So do you call yourself Scotty now?
No, at the end, yeah. And so everybody knows me as Scotty, except officially when I have to sign papers, you know.
I gotcha. So, Scotty, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay, and is that where you graduated high school?
Yes, yeah.
And tell me about your family. Like, what did your mom and dad do? Did you have brothers and sisters?
Okay. I'm an only child of a father who, of course, he served in World War I, but his job, he was a traveling salesman, okay? My mother was a homemaker. Actually, way back then, most women didn't work. I was an only child. We lived in various apartments in Flatbush, Brooklyn, okay, which was small and unimportant then, but getting very important and very expensive to live there now, okay? I went, graduated from Erasmus Hall High School, which is a very well-known high school because, for example, some famous people. Who's that singer that went there? Anyway, a lot of people do know Erasmus Hall High School. Graduated from high school, and then I guess they dropped the bomb. But I wasn't 20, and you have to be 20 years old to join the Navy. So I got myself a job at Travelers Insurance Company. I was just a young kid, just a file clerk. That's all I was. And I think I told you yesterday, the middle-aged lady in charge of the file department had a bad time with us because we used to be playing hide-and-seek and games in the file department instead of doing our work, OK? okay?
Well, you were hiding. You should have just told her you were hiding files. You know, you were looking. You were looking for that hidden file that you couldn't find.
I wasn't that smart then. But that I'll use that if I ever need it again. Anyway, as soon as I became 20, I knew I wanted to join the Waves. So I have an interesting story, if you want to hear it, of how lucky I was to get into the Waves. Do you want to hear the story?
Of course I do. That's what we're here for.
Okay. When I became 20, I went into the office. I don't remember where stuff was, but there must have been about a dozen of us, and all very young. In other words, to join the Waves, you had to be between 20 and 32 years old. Okay, but this group in the filling out applications, they were all as young as I was. All right, and while I was waiting, a girl who went in to see the doctor before me came out crying. Okay, and I said to her, "What's wrong? You know, what's wrong?" Because she was really crying kind of bad. And I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I can't, they're not going to take me. I have flat feet." Okay? Well, I thought that over for a minute, and I walked over to I knocked on the doctor's door and went in. And I said, "Sir, a girl came out crying. She can't join the Navy because she's got flat feet. I've got flat feet." You like that? You like that story, Gene?
Yeah, so what did he say?
And he looked me, I stood there as much as attention as I was, and he looked me up and down, and he said, "Did I mention your feet?" And I said, "No, sir." He said, "Well, get out of here and wait your turn." Okay. And out I went, waited my turn, and he passed me.
So how did you hear about the Waves?
What'd you say?
How did you hear about the Waves?
Oh, I think as soon as Japan started fighting with us, that was all over the newspapers. I mean, everything. The wax joint first. They had a tougher time than we did. The girl in the army. They even got to places like Guam, and some of them were even taken, you know, they took time. But Navy was, by the time I was 20, the Navy was second nature to me.
Okay. So when did you serve? What year did you join? You said you were 20.
Okay. I maybe not exact, but I think the first day I joined, as I said, I had to wait till I was 20 years old, was January 8th, 1943.
Okay. So how old are you now?
97.
You can't tell over the phone. You're...
Are you sitting down? I'm 97.
Hey, 97 years young.
You never can tell. If my money holds out, I may stick around a long time. You never can tell.
So when World War II started, you were still in Brooklyn?
Oh, yes. I lived there until I went into the Navy.
Okay. And tell me about how you heard about Pearl Harbor for the first time.
You know what? You know, when you're that young and you're just out of high school and you got a new job, it comes over the radio, not television, comes over the radio, comes in the papers. It's exciting, but you're still kind of young, you know?
Right.
It's dramatic, and your first reaction is, "I want to join up," but then I've got to wait a year and a half until I'm old enough.
Well, and it seems like back then it was a very different time from now in terms of patriotism and military service, so like...
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me your impressions of what it was like back then with patriotism and military service.
Well, as I say, I was young, so most of my friends were also young, but all of the boyfriends we ever had, they all joined up immediately. Everybody wanted to join up. my mother ended up working in while I was away, because she was lonely anyway. She was working in a bomb factory making bombs. A woman who had never worked before, you know, had been a homemaker. It was 100% patriotic. It's not like it is today. It's 100% American.
I can't even imagine. I've never been alive for that.
How old are you?
I'm 39.
Oh, you're still a kid. Okay, go ahead.
So yeah, I mean, it sounds like a much different time than anything I've ever experienced.
It was actually, considering we were suddenly at war, it was a wonderful time, because you know, everybody was patriotic. There would be no such thing as not standing at attention when they played the anthem or the flag. There'd be nobody would kneel down on their knee. I mean, that wasn't what we had. We had a 100% patriotic country.
So I'm a little curious, and this may be off topic. What do you think about the people that are, like, today's world kneeling during the national?
I'm 100% Republican. I think they're a disgrace. Obviously they're absolutely. I really think that anybody on a team should stand at attention and do what they do. They can kneel and be insulting to our flag when they're on their own time, but not when they're a disgrace. Okay.
All right.
Are you getting all this taped on tape?
I'm getting it all taped.
Okay.
Well, and it's interesting, because I think about was it Ted Williams who was in the Navy? He left baseball and was fighting planes.
That's it. And so a lot. I don't remember them all, but so a lot of the movie stars, like Tyrone Power and people like that, they were all giving up their careers and wanting to win the war for this country. It was a whole different situation.
Now, were they giving up their careers, or were some of them drafted?
I know, really, most of the movie stars, they gave up their careers. They didn't wait to be drafted. They really didn't. They really that wasn't what they were. And most young men didn't even wait to be drafted. They all volunteered. Hey, come on, let's beat these Japs. Let's beat these Germans. That's what we wanted to do. Completely different country than we have today.
Completely different. So
completely different.
So before you joined the military, were you because you had to wait till you were 20? So like in that year and a half, while you were working, were you also doing anything to help the war effort, like volunteer stuff?
Actually, no, I wasn't. I don't know why I wasn't, but there was nothing much that we had to do. There was nothing for us to do at the time. They weren't that organized yet. You know, you buy war bonds, but I really didn't do any volunteer work.
Okay, so the next question is, how did you first hear? I could skip that one. So, what was your family's reaction? You said your dad had fought in World War I. Was he proud of you for joining up?
Did you say was he pleased that I joined up? Did you say?
Yeah, was he proud?
Oh, of course, of course. I was a very spoiled only child, and everything I did was right and wonderful as far as they were concerned. I had a fabulous family, and of course they were proud of me, you know.
So your dad was proud, and your mom was really proud too?
Of course.
So tell me about your trip to boot camp. So I imagine you got on a train in Brooklyn, right?
And well, boot camp was up at Hunter College in New York.
Okay.
So you really, you didn't go far. You rode on the subway and you went up to boot camp, okay?
Yeah, a lot of the, I've only interviewed one other lady and she had a much further trip. And then I've been reading through the other 50 ladies' interviews. And it seems like a lot of them were coming from places like Nebraska and getting to see parts of the country. But for you, you just stayed in New York.
I just got on a subway and went to New York, where before that, maybe I went to New York and went to the Paramount tour to the theater. This time I went to boot camp.
So,
do you want me to tell you what we did in boot camp?
That was my next question.
Okay. In boot camp, what they did, first of all, it seems to me they injected us. We had a couple of shots, okay? They asked us...
Did they tell you what the shots were, or did they just stick you?
Oh, no, they don't tell you anything. They line you up and whatever. But we had shots... They gave us spiels on the naval history. You know, they gave us the background of the Navy. As I say, I think most of us were about 20 years old. Most of the people, they weren't older. They weren't 32. They were all as young as I was, most of them. But anyway, we got history. We got lectures on health and that kind of thing, health, how to take care of yourself and so forth. And then, of course, they interviewed you to see what you were interested in. Now, I did not want to be either a yeoman or a storekeeper or any clerical thing. I wanted to deal with airplanes if I possibly could. So that was why they assigned me to an aviation machinist mate school. In other words, they did try to put you in the job you were interested in.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Oh, they were great all the way. So that was boot camp, and then
How long was boot camp?
I think it was 6 weeks. I'm debating whether it was 4 or 6, but to my memory, it was quite a while. It was about 6 weeks to get all of that accomplished.
And what was it like when you first got to boot camp? Like, what was like your rooming situation? Did you have your own room? Did you share a room with some ladies?
Andy, it's so long ago. I'm half guessing at some of this. No, certainly you didn't get your own room. Usually, to my knowledge, there were four of us in one room. It was two double-decker bunks.
And did you become close to the ladies that you shared a room with?
Well, you did at the time. Of course, we've long since forgotten each other. But while you were there for 6 weeks, you got to be pretty closely friendly. And on the other hand, you did know that you were all going in different directions because they were scheduling you for different schools.
Yeah, so it was like you didn't want to get too close with someone knowing that you'd probably never see them again.
Yeah, well, in other words, we're all very young and very friendly, but it's a temporary friendship because we're moving on.
I have had many of those in my years.
I bet you.
So what was the toughest part about boot camp for you?
There was nothing tough. It was just interesting... Completely, you know, I'm trying to remember, we probably learned how to march a little bit, come to think of it. But, and then, of course, I forgot to say, we had to get fitted for our uniforms. In other words, there was a lot of that kind of thing going on. There was nothing that was difficult. Not for me, nothing difficult.
So, tell me about your uniform. A lot of the women who we've interviewed loved the uniform, and I've even read some interviews that it played a factor in their joining waves.
It wasn't a factor in my joining, but once I got there, I loved the uniform. As a matter of fact, one of my sons is a judge in Kentucky, and he got friendly with a woman who was writing about waves, and my uniform is in a very small museum in Kentucky. My uniform is, at least not the skirt, but the jacket part is in a museum in Kentucky with my ribbons attached to it.
Wow, that's really amazing.
Well, my son's are very proud of the fact I was in the Navy, and they keep telling people about it. You know, I was complimented that Mike apparently got in touch with your outfit and got involved.
Yeah, he was the one who reached out to us. I think he read about my advisor's project in.
Right.
Is he an alumni of CU?
Is he what?
Where did your son go to college?
Boulder.
Okay, Boulder yeah. College, so he read about.
I mean, it's in Colorado.
Yeah, so that's so, where I am. Yeah, I'm getting my PhD at Boulder, and read about our project in an alumni.
Yeah,
thing, so.
That's it. You know, I didn't know my sons would head so much for their mother's publicity or were that proud of it, but apparently they were. And they are. I'm delighted. I'm delighted. So, anyway.
So after, is there anything? Well, let me ask one. Backtrack. Is there anything more about your uniform you want to talk about?
Not especially. You know what you've seen the Navy uniform, of course, and I think it looked good on most of us. When we went to Hawaii, of course, we had. Really more like dresses. They were gray and white striped. I don't know if you've ever seen any of our summer dresses, but in Hawaii, they were gray and white striped dresses, which ended up, I guess, looking like uniforms, but not, if you walk down the street, you might not say, hey, that's a wave, you know?
So how long has your uniform been in the museum?
Probably, certainly a year and a half anyway. This just, you know, it just came up and I finally sent the uniform to my son in Kentucky. And luckily the dogs didn't get it. The dogs got a lot of other things I sent. But the uniform was okay. So.
And was that something that you had taken with you to the assisted living community?
Oh, sure. It's something you never threw it away. You might throw your house dresses away, but you never threw the uniform away. So,
the woman I spoke with yesterday has her uniform in a case on the wall, is what her daughter told me.
Yeah, really. You might even throw your husband away, but you didn't throw your uniform away. Okay. By the way, I did not throw my husband away.
I didn't think so. I mean, you told me you got some sons, so I figured you hung on to the husband.
I sure did.
We'll get to that a little later in the interview. We'll talk about him. But so after boot camp, where did you go for further training?
Okay, because I wanted something with airplanes. They assigned me to Norman, Oklahoma, as a training, and that really was 6 months. That was 6 months aviation machinist made training, and that was in Norman, Oklahoma.
And so that was your first choice for your job. Like, did they give you a choice of bases, or were you assigned? Like, was that basically the only?
That was it. That was it. If I was going to be an aviation machinist mate, if I wanted airplanes, I was going to Norman, Oklahoma, to that school.
All right.
There was no choice. Your choices ended. That was it. And it was very intensive school for 6 months. You really did learn one thing that you won't think to ask because you won't know. While I was in Norman, Oklahoma, at one point they grabbed me in my uniform, okay, and took me. I didn't know where I was going. They took me to where wrestlers were going to fight, you know, in a big arena.
Yeah.
And they put me in the middle of the ring with the wrestlers sitting at the side. And they said, this is little Ruthie Phillips. If you buy a lot of war bonds, they said to all the people sitting there, you know, the thousands of people sitting there, if you buy enough war bonds, little Ruthie Phillips will get to go home on a free vacation that won't be charged against her. So please, everybody, let little Ruthie Phillips get home, buy a lot of war bonds. So apparently they bought a lot of war bonds. And I got to shake hands with the wrestlers, and then they took me back and put me back on base.
That's really interesting, actually.
Andy, for some reason, and I don't know why, you'll see in the rest of places I go, a lot of us were trained to be aviation machinist mates, okay? And mostly, they'd end up in the A&R assembly and repair shops. For some reason, they always picked me out and put me someplace where I was by myself doing something different and interesting. So I think I was very lucky.
It sounds like it. It sounds like you got to do some amazing things.
I thought that was funny when they just picked me up, and of course I, you know, what I look like in the uniform, and everybody buy war bonds. So I think those people bought a lot of war bonds, and I shook hands with the great big wrestlers, and then they took me back to the base.
Yeah, actually, in some of the other interviews that I've read through, I've read similar stories where the women were used for publicity.
Yeah.
Was that the only time that you were ever used for publicity in your uniform?
Actually, that was the only time I ever heard of it, that ever happening. But I thought I'd mention it to you.
Well, thank you for mentioning it. So you were in Norman, Oklahoma for 6 months. Tell me about your advanced training.
What did you say?
Tell me about those 6 months. Like, what did they have you doing while you said you were working a lot by yourself? Like, what were the types of projects you were doing?
Well, actually, you went to class, and they showed you how to... Now, the kind of airplanes that you got trained on were called, they're called Stearman. They're bi-level to radial engines. And what they trained you, you're in a classroom learning how to deal with, how to fix a radial engine. You were learning how to chock and put the chocks under the wheels of an airplane. You learned everything about the nomenclature of the aircraft. I'm sure I've forgotten half of it by now, of course, but you actually learned every part, so that supposedly if you were out in a Stearman biplane and it broke down for any reason, you could fix it.
Wow. So what were you doing in your spare time, like during your advanced training? Like, did you guys go out on the town?
You had movies. There were sailors in the class. Some of them dated, some of them didn't. No big deal. You had a full day of getting to meals three times a day, and maybe having a movie at night, or maybe not, just talking. You had a full day of work. It wasn't a short day. It probably started about 8 o'clock and ended up at about 5:30 or 6. It was a big day, and you didn't go play tennis. I mean, that's not what you did.
You were,
you maybe
there to
went
work.
Back to your room, which of course you shared. And of course, what we moved into in Norman, Oklahoma, what had been sailors' barracks, of course, and I happened to be topside. I was up over the top deck, and we were all in double decker bunks and that kind of thing. I always selected the top bunk so that people didn't sit on my bunk and mess me up. Okay.
So did you become close to some of those women there, or?
Yeah. You were there for 6 months, so you really made several good friends. And then when you moved on to your next place, you didn't see those friends anymore, you know?
Did you keep up with any of them after the war, after, like, your time?
One of them I did. She came to New York. She wanted to be a singer, and she came to New York. And actually, we went out to dinner one night in our uniforms, okay? We went to a very expensive restaurant that I'd heard of, but now I don't remember its name, but we just figured we still had some of our mustering out pay. We'd go to a really expensive restaurant, but we went in uniform, okay? When I asked for the check, the waiter said it had been taken care of. A husband and wife took care of our check.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really nice.
And that's how things were those days anyway, you know? It was, even that short time, that right after the war, people were still patriotic. Anyway, I took you off your message. So, yes, I made friends, but we didn't do anything exciting in that 6 months, except, and you went home and studied, too. And when the 6 months was over and they gave the exam, we all got our AMM 3C, meaning aviation machinist made third class. Every one of us passed, okay?
But you were the star.
I don't think so. I think every one of us probably thought we were the star.
But we'll just say for the interview purposes, you were.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
So, after your advanced training, where did you get stationed?
Okay, then I got stationed in Dallas, Texas. Okay, and Andy, you had no choice. I mean, you were sent where you were sent. There was no choice. And I was sent to Dallas, Texas. And there again, I was lucky. Most of the girls went into the assembly and repair shops, which I never even saw. So I think of them as maybe like a factory thing. I don't know. But I was assigned all by myself in the what they call the parachute loft. That's where I had to, anybody who required a parachute, I had to hand it to them, select one and hand it to them. And then when they returned it, different people will return it, zip it open to make sure nothing was left inside of the parachute, and then check them off and so forth. Now, my claim to fame there, I'm going to forget his name. Robert Taylor, have you ever heard of the actor Robert Taylor?
I have not.
Okay. Anyway, he was very well known. My claim to fame was that Robert Taylor came, and I was right there at the counter at the parachute loft, and he handed me his parachute, and I unzipped it to make sure everything was all right. And I handed Robert Taylor, a famous movie star, his dirty socks that I took out of the parachute where he had it in with his parachute. That was my claim to fame.
I would have kept one of the socks and said, I have Robert Taylor's sock.
I didn't think of it. Anyway, so I was there in Dallas for a year. Now that's the same thing as you're sleeping, you're bunked in what had been sailors' quarters. Of course, they didn't build the quarters for waves. I'm hearing something. Is that one of our phones?
I got a text message. Don't worry about it.
Are you okay?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm good.
Now, this is a story I wouldn't tell everybody, but I'm getting to know you pretty well. One of the funny things in the wave barracks, there were wave offices, and then there were lower deck and upper deck and so forth. But at one time, in the very front of the beginning of the barracks, there were two urinals, okay? And I realized that the wave officer had put flowers in them, right? She put full flowers in the urinals. And I said, why? What did you do that? Because she caught somebody brushing their teeth in the urinals. In other words, the girls had never seen that before. You know, this was all this was brand new to them. Anyway, I lived in my parachute loft. I was there for a year. Okay.
Okay. And when you were there for the year, I asked this question earlier. What did you do in your spare time? Like, what did you and the other waves do?
Okay, what we did was interesting. Okay, now that was Dallas, Texas, right?
A lot more exciting than Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, see, Norman, Oklahoma was just a little town. We didn't do much or but now Dallas, Texas. Okay, then of course all of us went. When we had an afternoon off or whatever, then the buses would take us into Dallas, the main part of Dallas, and all of us, or at least my friends, all opened charge accounts in places like Neiman Marcus and Teich Gettinger, because we realized people couldn't tell we were in uniform. They couldn't tell if we came from very rich families or what, okay? We never really bought anything, but we all had very famous charge accounts in the famous stores in Dallas, Texas.
So you'd go shopping on the town, but just...
didn't buy a thing.
Didn't buy anything, just looking around.
Yeah. You know, if your parents were trying to send you a present, what they could send you, for example, was a lady's slip, a white slip, or white gloves. There was nothing else they could send you. You know, there's nothing else you could, writing paper. But in other words, for presents, your family was more inclined to send you money so that you could go out in Dallas and have some fun.
Tell me about when you say have some fun, what do you mean besides, like,
maybe taking a bus ride in the suburbs just to see what it was like. Maybe going to a movie. Fun meant different things to us then. By then I was 21, than it means to a 16-year-old here. Fun doesn't mean the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
we were all so young and innocent. It was wonderful. Okay.
So you were there for a year, and then did you get stationed somewhere else after that?
Yes, then they sent me back to Norman, Oklahoma, okay? They sent me back to Norman, Oklahoma, and that was where I had the best job I've ever had in my life. Want to hear about it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Once again, I was selected all by myself to be on the flight line. Now, back in Norman, Oklahoma, the officers were training the cadets to fly. In other words, they were teaching them how to fly, okay? And so what I did was assign the planes. I was the gal. And of course, those days, I was dressed in dungarees. I was dressed like a sailor, you know. I wasn't dressed in wave uniform. I had a big board, a chart board made out of wood, of course, about 12 feet by 12 feet, something like that, with every airplane number listed on it, okay, and that's what it was called, the pegboard. And you had a peg if the plane was on the flight line, or you moved it if it flew away, and you put it out in another peg until it came back, and then you moved it back where it belonged. Now, the only thing, there must have been about 200 those steermen I told you about. We used to call them yellow perils. They were biplanes. And that's what we had learned how to fix if they needed fixing, which, of course, I never did that part. What I really had to know to assign the planes to the officers and cadets, it's a routine flight, in other words, they're being taught that day, they got the propeller was a wooden propeller, okay? If it was a flight test, they got a jet propeller. A metal propeller, and that I had to know the difference to what they were doing that day, and assign them the correct plane, and then move the peg when they brought the plane back safely.
And You, so is that another one of the instances where it was just you? It wasn't like there wasn't.
No, yeah, it was just me and one of my girlfriends ran the little scooter thing that would take the disabled planes to the hangar to be fixed. She drove the broken planes back, and then I had one other girlfriend who could relieve me now and then, so I could go to lunch or something like that. But otherwise, and we worked from about 8 o'clock in the morning. The first officers and cadets came out, and we worked till about 6 o'clock at night. Okay, and by the way, part of that, you also stood duty. All right, so when you're on duty, you might be on duty at night from 12 to 4 or 4 to 4 to 8, okay? And it was sometimes you're out there on the flight line. It could be 1 o'clock in the morning, and you're out there guarding the planes, right? We were guarding the planes from the Japanese coming over and stealing our planes in Oklahoma.
So did they give you guns to guard the planes?
No. Actually, I forgot to tell you, when we were in mech school, while we were training to be mechs, we also had carbine training, how to shoot a carbine, okay? Now, we never used it. We just learned how to shoot. But that was one of the other things we learned to do.
You said we were in Mexico? Did you?
No.
Where was that they taught you how to shoot?
No, yeah, they taught us how to when we were at the aviation machinist made school.
Oh, okay, I heard Mexico.
No, that the mech school was one of the things that they taught us how to use the carbine. I don't know why but what I think is funny is that by the time I was on, say, on midnight or 1 o'clock on duty in Oklahoma, guarding the airplanes from the Japanese coming over and stealing the little planes, we all thought that was hysterical, you know. So
yeah, that is pretty funny.
That's ridiculous. And of course, while we were on duty, when it was freezing cold, we'd all climb into the cockpit, those of us on duty. There was more than one. I mean, there'd be six of us on duty, maybe. We'd climb into the cockpits to try to stay warm until somebody told us the officer was coming, and then we'd jump out and stand at attention. Okay?
And so,
didn't I have a good time in the Navy, you see?
You sure did. Sounds like it. So was Norman where you were stationed when the end of the war happened?
I was back in another year on that pegboard with the officers and cadets, maybe a year and a half, and then the war in Europe ended. Okay, the war ended in May in Europe, and that's when they came up with the idea of sending some of us to Hawaii.
Oh, cool! So you got to go to Hawaii too.
Yep. As I say, the war in Europe was ended, and now we're all going to concentrate on the Pacific, all right? And they came up with, do anybody want to go to what they said? If you sign up to go to Hawaii, you'll be there for the duration of the war plus 10. It meant plus 10 more months. But anyway, I signed up. I think I probably was the first tip of the waves that went over there, but I'm not sure. And they flew us over there. And now what's your next question?
So how long were you in Hawaii?
Okay. Here's how Hawaii went. They flew us over there. Have you ever been to Hawaii?
I have. Believe it or not, I've been to 47 states, and that's one of the only ones.
Well, you got to get there. Anyway, they flew us to Hawaii, and we were put up. I don't know. Maybe there were about 20 of us waves. That's all I remember. We were billeted the name of the place is Ford Island, F-O-R-D, Ford Island. You have to take a launch to get from Ford Island, where you were sleeping, to the mainland, just a short launch ride. Anyway, they put us up at Ford Island. Andy, when we got there, 10 days later, we dropped the bomb, okay? We were only in Hawaii for the first 10 days, and then we dropped the bomb on the Japanese, okay?
Okay.
Okay, and then they didn't give up, so we dropped the second bomb. Now, then immediately, at one point, so in other words, we'd only been there about 10 days. We hardly had time to get any assignments or anything. But at one point then, all of a sudden in the middle of the night, somebody got a bus and drove it on Ford Island, drove around to the barracks and called out to all of us. There were sailors and waves, and we all came out in our pajamas and jumped in the bus. The war is over, the war is over. So they, after the second bomb was dropped, then the Japanese gave up.
So that's how you heard about it, and what?
That's how we heard about it.
What did you do next? Like they took you in the bus, and then did you go back to?
that was the middle of the night that we heard they drove the bus around just to tell us all and to celebrate. We just drove around Ford Island screaming, you know, the war is over, and so forth. Now, I was still, so now I'm in Hawaii, and so with the other girls and so forth, for about 2 months before they finally got everything organized and sent us back home. But now we're in Hawaii without a war going on, okay? So that was really very pleasant. What you did, you made friends, and of course I made friends and boyfriends and so forth, and you hitchhiked. I was enlisted, of course. You couldn't go out with an officer. But the other friends I had, you hitchhiked all over the island in uniform, of course. That's the only clothes you had. You didn't have any other clothes. And everybody picked you up, drove you all around the island, and the war was over. So you had about 2 months, there till they got completely organized and finally sent us home. They sent. I don't know about everybody else, but I ended up on a. A ship that was used for sick people, hurt people. What do you call that? Hospital ship. I was sent home, and I can remember sitting on the upper deck with all my friends. Coming back across the Pacific on just a beautiful night, coming back to San Francisco. The war is over, and that's it.
So you said those 2 months you hitchhiked around and did like a lot of fun stuff. Did you have work you had to do after the war during those 2 months?
You know what? If I had a job to do or any of us had a job to do, I don't even remember it. We were supposedly going every day and working in a hangar. And it must have been some dumb little clerical thing, but the war was over. Nobody was in the mood to do any work. We had to show up, you know. But maybe by about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, hey, you're free. Enjoy yourself, and you know, get the launch and ride to the mainland and do whatever you feel like doing. Have dinner. Do whatever you want to do. Or stay there and eat if you didn't feel that adventurous. But I made enough friends, and we just hitchhiked around Hawaii. I just got to know all about Hawaii.
So then when you get back to, like, when you get back and the war's over, tell me about what it was like going back to civilian life. Is that when you met your husband?
Okay, they put us... They landed us back in San Francisco, which is nice because I got to see San Francisco, you know, the waterfront, the whole thing. And we must have been there for about 3 days, and they mustered us out in San Francisco. So in other words, you were a civilian by the time you left San Francisco, and to my knowledge, we got $200 mustering out pay, to my knowledge. And by the way, when I was an aviation machinist, made second class, the salary was $96 a month. Okay?
Wow.
Anyway, now you want to know what happened when I got back in the States?
Yeah, so like you get back and then you go around San Francisco. I assume after that you went back to New York?
I think that they flew us back. I mean, everything was paid for by the Navy, but I got back to New York, and I think my mother met me in a taxi, and we drove to Brooklyn, okay? Anyway, what my plans were then, of course, now I've got the GI Bill, all right? You know all about the GI Bill, I'm sure.
That was going to be one of my next questions, but go on.
Okay. Now, in Brooklyn, I could have walked to Brooklyn College. It was within walking distance. Brooklyn College is free. If you got a good enough grade, you can get into it. It's free, okay? Instead of that, I wanted a prestigious college. I wanted Barnard, which is the girls, the very, very snooty college that's affiliated with Columbia, okay?
Yeah.
So instead of just walking to class in Brooklyn College, I traveled an hour each way on the subway just to get up to Barnard in New York to use my GI Bill on a very exclusive college.
Okay, so you used your GI Bill. What degree did you get?
I got a degree in political science, and I went summer and winter. In other words, I got home like before Christmas, and I signed up immediately for the February term, and went. But I took an hour each way on the subway because I wanted a snooty college. That's what I did. Now the GI Bill paid for all your books. I think it even paid for your pencils and your pads. It really was very generous, and it also, the GI Bill paid you $60 allowance a month.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So, of course, I lived at home, obviously, and I had $60 a month from the Navy to, allowance, and then I always took little part-time jobs just to get a little extra money to, you know.
So now, when did you meet your husband?
Oh, you really want that? That's a serious story. You really want that story?
Only if you want to share it.
I'd love to share it. Okay, I'm going to tell you the honest truth. You ready? What was your? Okay. After I graduated, I got a job on a magazine. And my job was to walk around New York or drive around New York and look at furniture and lamps and then write about them. That was my job. So part of my job, I made a friend who kept telling me about my cousin Frank. You really have time for all this?
I got time.
Okay. She told me about her cousin Frank. Now, her cousin Frank had joined the Marines right out of high school. He joined when he was 17. And, of course, he went to the Marines. And he lost his leg on Tinian. Tinian is the island that we sent the bomb from. Okay?
Okay.
He lost his leg on Tinian. And his family, what good is he? He had two sisters and a brother. What good is he? He's a cripple. What good's he going to be, all right? And I heard about that. He worked for RCA and spent 2 years over in Korea after the war was over and everything, just as a job. And then he came back and was going to go back again. But I heard that his family thought, what good is he, you know? That made me kind of mad, all right? That was my Brooklyn mad. So when my girlfriend was giving him a farewell party because he had to go back again to Korea, he had signed up for another 2 years, when she was giving him a farewell party and, of course, invited me, I was completely, I was going to make such a big fuss over him that they got an idea that maybe he was pretty important after all, okay? I had that idea.
And that you fell in love with him.
Huh?
And that you fell in love with him.
Yeah, well, that comes later. But let me tell you this part, because you won't believe this, what a nervy thing I was. At the party, she... I said, can I help? Can I do anything for you? She said, we should hand out the peanuts, okay? I came to you and I said, Andy, you want some peanuts? And Matilda, do you want some peanuts? And so forth. I went over to Frank, and all I had just seen him for the first time. And I said, Frank, would you like a peanut? And he nodded, so I took the peanut, put it in my mouth, and put it in his mouth. He fell in love then, okay? That was it. I think he thought that he was getting a hot tamale, and he wasn't. And from then on, but that's how we met. And simply because I wanted to, I never saw him. I didn't know what he looked like or anything. I didn't know what he was like. But I just didn't want his sisters to think he was a cripple and couldn't end up to be anything. Now, the end of the story is we dated for a year and a half. He only had high school. He went to college. He went to law school. He ended up as a judge. And we had four kids.
And where did you end up, like, where? Was that in Kentucky?
We ended up in New Jersey, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, we ended up in New Jersey. But it took me a year and a half to fall in love. But you know, when you don't even, haven't even met anybody and you decide you want to make them be important, that was funny, you know?
Well, and I mean,
I gave him the peanut that way, I don't know what he thought. Anyway, it worked out.
So you have four kids and, what, like you said, I know one of them's a judge you mentioned. What did the other three do?
What is it? What about my kids?
Yeah, what did the other three do? Did any of them ever end up in the service?
Oh, that's one of my great prides. One of the things I brag about when you can't help but know it when you finally meet me. Of course, obviously, my husband and I were both in the service, all right? We had three sons. We have three sons and a daughter. The three boys went into the Marine Corps. That's Mike. That's the one who you're dealing with, you know, that Mike, that's the one that got in touch with you, your group. He went into the Marines. The second guy went into the Air Force Academy. The third guy went into the Army, okay? So my three sons were in the service. Now I end up with six grandchildren. You ready for this? Number two son has two sons, and the third guy has three girls and a boy. All six of them went into the service.
Oh, wow.
So that's one of the things I'm proud of. I do have a 17-year-old extra grandchild, but she's not old enough to do that yet. But when three sons and six grandkids all went into the service, that's one of the things I'm proud of.
Well, I mean, you were a trailblazer with, like, the women of the waves were trailblazers, so I imagine, and you tell me how proud your sons are of your time in the service, so I imagine that trailblazer of sorts had a big impact on them joining up.
I guess so. I didn't realize my sons were that pleased with me, but I'm delighted to find out that they are. I'm kind of thrilled.
Did you realize at the time that you were in Waves that you were a trailblazer?
No. As far as I'm concerned, I was nothing special at all.
So no. you still don't consider yourself a trailblazer?
No, there's a lot of people like me. A lot of us, probably. Although lasting till 97, I think, is pretty spiffy, you know?
And like you are like all there too, like.
I hope so.
I have a friend that's in the other room studying, and she sent me a text message that said, "I need to know her secret at 97."
You tell her, you know what the secret is? You find a wonderful husband to fall in love with and marry and stay married to him.
Talia, did you hear that? I took notes. She took notes.
fall in love and stay in love. I mean, that's... And have kids and all. Hey, by the way, are you married?
I am not.
Okay, then you have all that to look ahead at. Okay.
One day.
I won't ask about your kids then. Okay. Go ahead.
If I got kids, I don't know about them.
Okay.
So would you have wanted to, if you could have stayed in the waves after the war, would you have stayed in?
No, actually, it was a wonderful experience, but the war was over, and I wanted to go to college. So, hey, by the way, do the waves still exist? I don't know anything about them.
You know, I got to be honest, I don't know. I've been working on this project, but the project, I've been working on archives, so uh-huh. I don't know anything about if they still exist, but I'll look into it, and I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, find out, let me know. Really, when they, when we got out of the Navy, as far as I'm concerned, they didn't need us and didn't want us, and we every wave, to my knowledge, got out. And I didn't know if...
I would assume because women can now serve as soldiers.
Yes, yeah.
So I would assume that the waves are no longer a thing. But
yeah, I don't think they are. I don't know, but I'd like to know. But it was a fabulous, there was a war on. The whole country was patriotic. It was a wonderful time. It was a wonderful time. And as I said, my husband losing a leg, he made out well too. You know, he came back, ended up as a judge. So,
because he had a strong woman behind him.
That's what some people tell me. I think the fact that when he met me, I already had my degree, you know, I probably got on to him in the first place, but
that gave him that gave him a kick in the ass to want to get his degree.
Yeah. He at one time, I remember he said to me, Scotty, if I go, he had to first go to college, then to law school. If I do that, he said, then will you marry me? And I do remember my exact words were, it doesn't matter whether I marry you. Whoever's lucky enough to get you will be glad you did that. So, and it took him a year and a half to get me married.
So, do you think your life would have been different if you hadn't served?
Oh, I'm sure it would have been. But if we'd had a war and I hadn't done anything more than work in an insurance company, oh, that would have been terrible. Yeah.
Well,
no, that's a very important part of my life.
Okay. So, is there any, I don't really have any other questions, but if there's anything else you'd like to add or anything else you think is important?
I can't think of a fan of anything.
Well, then, thank you so much for your time. This has truly been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been a pleasure for me, too. Hey, you find yourself the right girl, will you?
I'll keep looking.
It may happen to you all at once. You never can tell, right?
It always happens when you're not expecting it.
Absolutely. Listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope I made some sense.
Made all the sense in the world, and this was a great experience for me because it's a lot different to actually be able to do an interview than to read through the transcripts of them and to hear the stories firsthand.
Yeah, because I told you some of the silly things that happened, you know. So, anyway, it's been a pleasure, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I eventually get to see the results or anything?
Absolutely. So what happens next is I'm going to have the interview transcribed, and then I have to send, I believe I emailed your son the release form, but I'll double check on that. And then once the interview is transcribed, it gets transcribed, but then I have to go through it again. And then I'll send you that so that you can, like, if there's anything you want to edit in it.
Oh, I bet you I don't. You know, I can't read anymore.
Okay.
So I'll send it to your son. They'll read it to me, the best I can do. So listen,
because sometimes
I'm lucky I'm doing this well at 97, right?
Oh, you're amazing at 97. and then I'm also gonna ask your son if he has any high resolution pictures of you, like in uniform, for us to put on the website.
I think Mike said he has one picture of me in uniform.
Okay.
But you know what? I wasn't special, but looking back on all the things that I got to do as the only one to do them, now I'm thinking maybe I was special way back then.
So wait, I guess at 97 years old, you're realizing you were a trailblazer now.
I don't know, but it was a great experience, and the whole rest of the life was great too. So listen, it was lovely talking to you.
It was lovely talking to you too.
And keep in touch, all right?
I was going to say, if when the quarantine's over, I find myself in Nevada, I'll stop by.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that. And we can have the food here is very good. See, right now, seriously, we are confined to our rooms. They have to be so careful, you know?
Yeah.
So, but let's hope we get over all this very soon, okay?
I hope so. You take care of yourself. Thank you again for your time.
You too. All right. Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.